I intended for us this week, and if you remember, I had mentioned that we were going to have a class studying Satan this week. But because of where we left off with Zophar's comments to Job, I wanted us tonight to look at the response by Job, and it's a rather lengthy response. And in view also of what's happened up at Virginia Tech, you think about the backdrop for what we're studying in this book, and that's suffering. And you have a lot of people that are suffering up at Virginia Tech, up in Blacksburg, Virginia, and I've heard that some have already began to say that that happened as a result of the sin that was either in the life of those students that were killed or the school or the town or whatever it is. But there are some that have come out in a very public way and have made those type of comments. And if you remember, looking at Eliphaz and looking at Bildad and Zophar, these were the things that they were saying. And we're a few thousand years removed from those comments, but this happened 2 days ago, and guess what? They're still being said. So you see, the mind of man hasn't changed very much in regards to those thoughts. And if we look at, human suffering, which, by the way, I will not be here next week, and Bill Ingram will be teaching a class on human suffering. And when we think about the things that have transpired up at Virginia Tech and look at a comparison with what has happened in the life of Job, we can see that Job was right in his defense against them, against those guys that considered his friends, when he began to tell them that sin and suffering, they don't always go together. You can't just say that a person is suffering as a result of sin, and you can't say that a person is prospering simply because they're righteous. Okay? And this is the point that Job was trying to get over to these guys, and they just figured between themselves that they were right and that everybody else was wrong. So I want us to look at chapter 12, and this begins his response. And Job begins to get a bit testy, okay? If you look at how he responded to Zophar, he uses a bit of sarcasm to start off. He says right off the bat that truly, you are the people, okay? No doubt you are the people. In other words, you're the ones that have all the wisdom. You think that you know everything there is to know about God. And then he says, but your wisdom will die with you. When you die, your wisdom is going to go with you. But God's word is, his wisdom is going to last forever. And we know that because Jesus said that heaven and earth will pass away, but what? His word will last forever. Okay? Let me ask you this. How is that possible? First off, do you really believe that? You do. Okay? Here is a situation where the Bible was interpreted by whom? Very good. All right. I wish you would have said that. You would have whispered that, because I was waiting for somebody to say interpreted by man. But she's exactly right. But you have many people that say that, you know, man interpreted the Bible and man is not perfect. So how can you trust this book? Because, they say I'm almost 100% sure that man made a mistake somewhere in his interpretation of what God had to say. Okay? And Job is saying to these guys, listen, you're not superior to me. I'm not inferior to you simply because you think that you have all the wisdom of God. You know, you can't look down on me even if you're right. Job says, I'm not inferior to you. And in fact, who does not know these things that you've already mentioned as it relates to God? These things are readily available in regards to knowledge. And Job says, we all know these things. So don't look down on me because you think you know more. He says, I'm one, verse 4, that's mocked by his friends who called on God and he answered him, the just and blameless who is ridiculed. The interesting thing about this particular part of this passage is this. When have we heard Eliphaz, Bildad, or Zophar in these first round of speeches that he's made, when have they conferred with God? When have they consulted God? How many times? Not a one, okay? But Job says that he called on God and that God answered him. Okay? He says that a lamp, verse 5, is despising the thought of one who is at ease and is made ready for those whose feet slip. The tents of robbers prosper, and those who provoke God are secure in what God provides by his hand. Job says that there is no way that sin automatically equals suffering. He says, because here are these guys that are robbers, and yet they have their tents that are full of those things that they've stolen, okay? And then he says that you have other individuals that provoke God, and yet they are secure. And he's trying to get to point to them that you can't just automatically assume that these things happen to me because either myself, my family, you know, my servant, somebody was living a life so full of sin that God decided that he was going to exact judgment on all of us right then. And that's basically what they're saying. Okay? And Job is pleading with them. We're gonna look at other passages throughout when they begin to speak in that second round of speeches. He's pleading with them to come to that understanding. Job does not deny the fact that these guys had some understanding about the things that he said in relationship to God and what his authority was and what his power was, but they were misapplying the scriptures. They were misapplying the word of God, okay? And that happens today. I told you what they said about this situation up there at Virginia Tech. I mean, this guy got up and he considers himself to be very religious. Matter of fact, he introduced himself as someone who was very religious. And he says that this happened as a result of sin. God got tired of the sin that was going on, and God made this happen. Okay, yeah. She says it should happen at all the colleges. But, I mean, at what point, I mean, if you think about this in a logical way, at what point do you begin to point and place the blame on who was sinful? Okay? If you use their logic, if the ones that died, is that to say that they were more wicked and more sinful than the ones that survived?
No, no way.
No. Okay? And then if you continue on in that logic, then you would have to say that those that didn't get shot, well, actually, well, they must be pretty righteous then. Okay? If you listen to that logic, that's what these guys are saying. That's what they're saying to Job. And Job is doing, in my opinion, a wonderful job in communicating to them in those areas that they're wrong. And then he gets a bit sarcastic again, and he says, you know, ask the beasts, they will teach you. Verse 7, the birds of the air, they will tell you. Speak to the earth, it will teach you. The fish of the sea will explain it to you. Who among all these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done this? He says that God is responsible for creating life, in whose hand is the life of every living thing and the breath of all mankind. Wisdom is with aged men, and with length of days, understanding. With God are wisdom and strength. He has counsel and understanding. If he breaks down a thing, it cannot be rebuilt. If he imprisons a man, there can be no release. If he withholds the waters, they dry up. If he sends them out, they overwhelm the earth. with God, with him are strength and prudence, sound judgment. He says that there is no one that can stand in the way of God. If God decides to do something, there's nothing that any of us can do to stop him. Okay? What have they been telling him thus far? You need to repent. You need to go before God and you need to plead your case as if he had the power to make this go away. Okay? They're telling him that you need to go and make sure that you repent first, and then you go before God and you tell God what you want. Job says that there is no one that can stop God. If God decides to do something, it's a done deal. Okay? And he says that even those people that are in high political positions don't have the ability. You have a lot of people that have the authority to exact judgment on anybody. They can be judge, jury, and executioner. Okay? When I was in the police academy, that was one of the things that they continued to teach to us. When you're on that street, you are judge, jury, and executioner. You can look at a situation and you can say, this person is wrong, they violated the law, and I'm going to take it within myself to choose and pass sentence. Choose the punishment and pass sentence on this person. And when they taught us this, they were teaching us this in regards to when we are to shoot and not to shoot. Okay?
Life and death.
Absolutely. Now, let's look at these next verses, beginning in verse 17. He says that God leads counselors away plundered. He makes fools of the judges. He loosens the bonds of kings and binds their waist with a belt. He leads princes away plundered and overthrows the mighty. He deprives the trusted ones of speech and takes away the discernment of the elders. He pours contempt on princes and disarms the mighty. He uncovers deep things out of the darkness and brings the shadow of death to light. He makes nations great and destroys them. He enlarges nations and guides them. He takes away the understanding of the chiefs of the people of the earth and makes them wander in a pathless wilderness. They grope in the dark without light, and he makes them stagger like a drunken man. He's saying that there is no power on earth greater than God. No one has the ability to contend with God. Okay? But you have some people that say, and this is not a political class by no stretch of the imagination, but you have some people that say that, well, God, your position is not in the life of government. You handle those things involving the church, and we as men, we will decide what is best for us as a nation or as a country. Okay? And they call it separation of church and state. And I've had this discussion with many people. What does Job say? Does Job say that God has anything whatsoever to do with the life of man as it relates to government? Yes, he does. Says that God is aware of those men and those women that are our leaders. God is involved in government of countries and nations. Why? Because, yeah, he's in control. He sets them up. But God is concerned about his people. Okay? And his people, he's already instructed us in regards to the law of the land to do what? Obey it, provided it does not interfere with his commandments. So God, is it a fair statement to say that God raises up leaders? He raises up good ones and he raises up bad ones, okay? And the description that he gives in regards to these leaders of at least the last 20, 22 years that I've been able to vote, it can pretty much describe just about every, without exception, just about every election that I've voted in describes in detail the type of leaders that we've had. We've had some great ones, and we've had some pretty, bad ones, and I won't ask for you to tell me which ones were good, which ones were bad. But understand that Job gives us some insight during this patriarchal period that God is supreme in authority. He's supreme in power. And that it does not matter what we fashion in our minds as being right. He's the only one that is able to be right all the time. Okay? He's the only one. And this is what Job is trying to get these guys to understand. Now, let's go on to the chapter 13. He says that I've seen all these things, I've heard it, and I understand it. What you know, I also know. I'm not inferior to you again. He mentions it. He mentions that again. Twice he mentions it. And there's an implication there that they are talking down to him as if he has no understanding. Okay? Remember what he said, that it was almost impossible for him to understand what the wisdom of God was. What was the example that he gave? By the animals. I heard it was a... Yes. Okay? And we know that's impossible. And so they're saying that, you don't have the ability to understand what God has to say. And they did. Okay? And he says that, I'm not inferior to you. In fact, he says, verse 3 of chapter 13, but I would speak to the Almighty and I desire to reason with God. He says, I'm going to turn to God. They turn to each other. Remember, Eliphaz said that we've already met. We figured it out. We know what you need to do. And you don't need to try to figure it out. We're going to do it ourselves. Okay? But Job says that I want to go directly to God. Don't you wish that was the attitude that everybody had today? If we had the understanding that God is the only supreme being who is right all the time and that we're going to consult with him in regards to whatever our life says, especially those things concerning the church and concerning salvation, okay? This would be a different place. Not only this country, but this entire world would be affected in a very spiritual and positive way if we all took the attitude that we're going to consult God and that we're going to accept what he says. We're going to make whatever changes we need to make in our life. We might lose some friends because we decide to no longer do certain things and address in a certain way. We might lose friends. We might even lose family members. But he's the Almighty. And he's deserving of everything that he has commanded us to do. And we should, in fact, feel honored to have the opportunity to give back to him a portion. And I know automatically your mind goes to money, but I'm talking about time. It's a lot of people that feel that, I'm just too busy for God. There's a lot of other things I should be doing and a lot of other things I could be doing. But, I'm not going to touch on that. I'm going to be quiet. I get in trouble. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. You're absolutely right. We're all indebted to God for what he's given us. Well, and that's the point we made earlier. You know, we need to consult God, the authoritative scriptures. There's nothing in here that is wrong. There's nothing in here that contradicts something else. There's nothing in here that is not applicable to each and every one of us. You know, we can't say that, you know, well, you know, I like this part of it, but well, this part here really suits me, you know. And that's what a lot of people do. Now, we've already caught that rabbit. Let's keep moving. Verse 4, he calls them forgers of lies and worthless physicians. He says that, oh, that you would be silent, it would be your wisdom. Now, hear my reasoning, hear the pleadings of my lips. Will you speak wickedly for God and talk deceitfully for him? Will you show partiality for him? Will you contend for God? Will it be well when he searches you out? Here are these individuals that say that I know just as much, or maybe I know a little bit more than God. You don't need to consult God. You need to listen to us. Okay? And Job is saying that you need to understand that God is going to do what? Yeah. God is going to search you out. And he says, because you have shown partiality for him, you have spoke wickedly, you've been deceitful in regards to those things that he said. And he said that he will surely rebuke you, verse 10, if you secretly show partiality. And he's amazed that these guys are not even afraid to even take on this attitude, you know. He says that your platitudes are proverbs of ashes. Your defenses are defenses of clay. Hold your peace with me and let me speak. As if someone's trying to cut him off. And he's saying, you know, hold, give me a chance to finish my thought. Then let come on me what may. What do I take my flesh and my teeth and put my life in my hands? Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. It does not matter, according to Job, what happens to me in regards to me following God. Because remember, he made the comment to his friend that you must concede, you must accept the fact that you look at me and you do not see a different person. He says that my righteousness, what? Still stands. I'm still that same person. And the charges that were made against him is that he somehow changed or he misrepresented himself. But he says, I'm the same person and understand that I'm going to trust God. It doesn't matter what you say. If I have to die, I will trust him. He says that God will be my salvation, for a hypocrite could not come before him. Listen carefully to my speech and to my declaration with your ears. Now, we're going to see throughout the rest of this that they didn't take his, you know, his words lying down, if I can use that phrase. He asked them to, and pleaded with them, just listen, just hear me out. Hear what I have to say and take into consideration those things that you know, those things that you understand about God and the things that I'm saying, and then, you know, allow for the righteousness of God to work in you understanding what is taking place. And in fact, he's really talking to himself too, because there are times in his speeches that he seems a bit confused, you know. And some of those things that these guys have said are kind of creeping in. Okay? And he's getting away from rational thinking with that which he already understands. Now, in relationship to listening to what God has to say, and I got two Bibles here. I write notes in all of them, so I got the good notes on this page and this one, and the other one's over here. But in relationship to what he's saying to them, to listen carefully to my speech. You ever heard anybody say that God gave you two ears and one mouth? which one you should use more. You know, there's a lot of truth to that. You know, quite often we can do two things. We can not listen, or we can listen to the wrong people. And what he's saying to them is, hear these things. Not only hear them, but come to an understanding of them. You know, a lot of people hear John 3:16 and say that all you need is what? Belief, and that's it, and you're saved. Okay? But if you look at the context of that statement, Jesus was talking with Nicodemus, and that was a part of the entire process. But you go to any football game, soccer game, you know, you name it, and you're going to see John 3:16 plastered somewhere. But listening, I thought I was going to get by without that sun tonight. If someone truly listens to what Jesus is saying and look at that in its context, there's no way that you will be able to come to an understanding of that being hearing equals salvation. Hearing and believing equals salvation. Okay? These guys came to the understanding that I can take what I know. I can take that and make it suit what I believe. Okay? And once I do that, then it becomes right in my mind. Therefore, it must be right. How many people in here, you know, when you talk, want to be wrong? Nobody. Everybody wants to be right. You know, and sometimes if it means, you know, taking a position that goes against what God has to say, a lot of people still take it. Rather than saying, I've been wrong, I don't understand it. I mean, they'll go down, you know, to the death, really. Believing something that's wrong. And I give you a quick example. I studied with a Baptist preacher. He preaches every Sunday here in Palm Beach County to about 450 people every week. And we had a discussion about salvation. And we spent the better part of 2 hours discussing salvation. And he said to me, you're exactly right. He says, but my pastor would not allow me to stand up. He's just an assistant or associate. He said that my pastor would not allow me to get up and say that. Knowing and admitting that the scriptures supported everything that we were talking about, believing, repenting, confessing, and being baptized. The issue was baptism. Okay? But here's an example of 2007 that dates back a few thousand years to this patriarchal period during this time. These men were the same way. They didn't want to understand. They heard what they wanted to hear, and then they made it suit their own thoughts, and therefore it became a commandment within themselves. Okay? That happens all the time.
Might help us to remember your analogy of having 2 ears and 1 mouth. If we thought about the fact that we can hear without being judged, but we can't speak without being judged.
Very good point. Absolutely, yeah. That's where I was going. Yeah.
Very good point. There are times in this event that Job begins to question whether or not, you know, these guys are actually right. You might be on to something. But he still goes back, and it's like, you know, he begins to think about things, and you know how you... And I know you women won't understand this when I use this example. And my wife tells me I use too many examples. But you ever been going down a road traveling and then you find out that you're going the wrong way? But rather than stopping and turning around, you know, and having to admit that you're wrong, you go to the next exit? You know, I've done it. I've done it several times. You know. But in that example, I had already fashioned within my thought process that I knew exactly where I was going, okay? My wife tried to give me the map. I don't need the map. I know where I'm going. So she decides to read the map, okay? And she begins to point out, okay, well, you need to get off here and go there. I have it. I got it. I know exactly where I'm going. But as a result of me failing to, I heard what she was saying, but I didn't really listen to what she was saying. We went about 25, 30 miles out of the way, okay? Because I thought I was right, and I just didn't want to admit that she was right at the time. I don't do that anymore. Huh? Well, yeah. After about five times, I learned my lesson, you know. But you think about what's happening in the life of Job now, okay? And here are these guys trying to get him to understand what they think, what they have said within themselves is what's right. And Job knows that they're wrong. But he's in such a depressed state and a state of confusion that he does not fully, you know, discredit everything that they say. And I think that's the point that you were making. He doesn't fully discredit them every opportunity that he had. Okay?
You know, I think sometimes he might have believed that God was doing something to him, but he knew it was not because of what he had done.
Okay. Okay. We're going to get into that. That's coming up. Maybe there is something to it, yeah. She was saying that sometimes Job appears to believe that maybe these guys are onto something. Maybe there is something going on. Maybe I've done something that has brought this upon me. And in fact, you know, we can jump ahead. I believe it's in chapter 14. Let me see. Where Job does says that God, no, it's in chapter 13. Look down in verse number 23. This is after he said that he was going to ask God to hear his case. You know, he makes reference in the previous chapters about there being a courtroom, you know, and him needing a mediator. And so he says that he's willing to deal with God, but he's going to give God two conditions that he's willing to deal with. Now, he's either courageous or crazy, okay? To dare God, to challenge God. But he says in verse 23, this is what he would say. How many are my iniquities and sins? Make me know my transgression and my sin. There's some indication there that he's beginning to think that, you know, these guys might be onto something. Yes. Then look what he says. Why do you hide your face and regard me as your enemy? Will you frighten a leaf driven to and fro? And will you pursue dry stubble? Now he's beginning to think of himself as being insignificant. Okay? He's beginning to think of himself not in the value that God sees him, but he's beginning to think of himself as nothing more than dry stubble or a frightened leaf. Then, verse 26, for you write bitter things against me and make me inherit the iniquities of my youth. Wrong, Job. Okay? Wrong, Job. God does not write, as he says, bitter things against him. God has not allowed him to inherit the iniquities of his youth. Okay? Two things with that. Job, remember now, his character is of what? Being blameless and what? Upright. Okay? Does not mean that he was sinless. And Job says that in his younger days, I was not perfect. I was not that sinless person. Okay? And here is the very interesting thing about this. The word inherit. Okay? Do we inherit sins? We don't. Okay? How do we? How do we inherit sins? Syphilis is a sin?
No. The babies weren't blind. So it inherited the sin.
Okay. All right. I would respectfully disagree. But I think I understand what you're saying. But in regards to sin, you know, we don't inherit the sins. Remember in Ezekiel when Ezekiel was talking about inheriting the sins of the father? Right. We don't inherit those sins. The consequences. Okay. That's what you were talking about, right? Yeah. Yeah. You have an adulterous affair or some form of a fornication that takes place, and as a result, someone contracts a sexually transmitted disease. Stop me if I'm not accurately portraying what you're saying. And then as a result of that, the baby is born with AIDS or something of that effect. Am I? Well, exactly. You got to give me, that's the second time you've done that. You got to give me a chance to talk. They haven't inherited a disease. I mean, they've inherited a disease. They have not inherited a sin. Okay? So here, when Job is saying that God has allowed him to inherit the iniquities of his youth is incorrect. Okay? He says that God put his feet in stocks and watched closely all his paths, set a limit to the soles of his feet, for man decays like a rotten thing, like a garment that is moth-eaten. Man is born of a woman, is of a few days, and full of trouble. He comes forth like a flower and fades away, flees like a shadow and does not continue. And do you open your eyes on such a one and bring me to judgment with yourself? Here again, Job is seeing himself as being born just to have trouble. That's one. Okay. Okay. And Job, prior to these guys arriving there with him, would not have dared say such a thing. Okay. Because when this happened, remember, what did Job do? He worshiped God. Okay. So Job understood that there was some significance in staying loyal to God, because he said that I'm going to stay righteous. I'm going to continue to trust in him. But now he turns around after these guys have begun to speak, and he begins to take on just a little bit of what they have already said. Okay? But Job makes a very interesting demand. He demands to see God. Okay, not see God. He demands to take on God. And he got his wish beginning in chapter 38. Okay? And God in chapter 38 told him, prepare yourself. Okay? Prepare yourself like a man. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He says, in fact, at the beginning of that, he says, either you call and I will answer, or I'll call and you answer. Oh, yeah. Well, he gets his wish. We all know what happens when God begins to speak to him, in chapter 38. And I'm sure that, in hindsight, if he had to do it all over again, he would have chosen his words a little bit differently. But we see here, he says that God has brought judgment upon him as a result of what? The life that he's lived? Is that what he's saying? Or is that, does that sound like the Job that we in the very first class that we had, does that sound like the Job? No. This sounds more like a combination of Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. And then you couple that with the fact that he's depressed, he's lost his servants, he's lost the trust of his wife, he's lost his children, he's lost everything, all of his riches. And now he begins to think that, maybe I did do something wrong, Bill.
And I think it's important to see.
Mm-hmm. Everyone heard that, right? And you think about, Bill, along those lines, in regards to the things that he said, okay? God said when we come to him in prayer, we're to come to him how? Boldly, okay? Now, is that boldness, I'm Hebrews 4:16. If I'm wrong, somebody straighten me out, but I believe it's 4:16. That boldness that God tells us to come to him with, is that a boldness of question? Is it a boldness of not being fearful? Or is it a boldness of just being able to speak freely, or a combination of all? I've heard three different things.
It's a boldness with respect.
A boldness with respect. Okay? Okay, God says, that we're able to come. He's going to provide for us those things that we need. He already knows what we need before we ask. And he says that you come to me and you come boldly. You ask me what you want, okay, and with the understanding that I'm going and the expectation that I'm going to give it to you. He's going to answer every single prayer except one. What's that one prayer that God won't answer? John 9:31. He's not going to hear the prayers of sinners, okay? But God answers every single prayer of those people that belong to him. It's either a yes or it's a no, but he answers every single one. He still didn't finish. Okay, let me say this real quick, and then Bill, next week, you got this. In verse 13 of chapter 14, he says that God, hide me in the grave that you would conceal me until your wrath is past, that you would appoint me a set time and remember me. Okay? He's saying to God that allow me to go into the grave until these things pass and come back. Think about this and discuss it with Bill. When he says that, do you believe, based on the scriptures, that Job is asking God to restore him back to the position that he was already in, or just to get him out of the situation? You got that, Bill? Think about it. Read it and answer that with Bill next week. I don't know if you can incorporate that in or not. If you can, I'll pick it up, man.